When systems go down, when tickets pile up, and your best tech walks out the door, what does all that really cost you? At CBT Nuggets, we help IT teams stay sharp, confident, and certified with online training that's built for the real world. From cybersecurity to cloud, our expert-led courses help your team close skill gaps before they turn into business risks. Invest in your team. Go to cbtnuggets.com/solutions and unlock training that makes your team sharper and your system stronger.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
1, 2, 3, 4. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Not an Episode of Grappling with Canada with Not your host, Andy the Taxman. Why do I say that? Because today is a special presentation of the Wrestling with Everything Coast to Coast program that was broadcast on the YouTube page, which, by the way, I'll stop you right now. If you go in today's show notes and you click on that YouTube link, it should be at the very top of the program, you'll be linked to Russ Jackman's YouTube page. That's where you can find all of their Wrestling and Everything Coast to Coast podcasts that they've done throughout the years. Do me a favor and hit that subscribe button. But I digress. I was very honored to be a host on their program this past week. Now, I've been listening to them for a long time. The program includes the aforementioned Russ Jackman, great friend of the program, Evan Ginsberg, who you just heard last week, and multiple-time guest, Dr. Mike Lano. We had a fantastic conversation that ranged all things from Canadian professional wrestling to even me getting heated for once, which doesn't normally happen on the Grappling with Canada programs, as you all well know. But I hope you enjoy the program. It was a delight being on their show. Honestly, it's a different experience being interviewed as to being the interviewer or presenter of you. So I had a great time. I was honored to be there. I hope that you will all enjoy the program. And like I said, do me a big favor and hit that subscribe button in the YouTube link that's provided at the top of this program. Please enjoy.
Hello and welcome to Wrestling and Everything Coast to Coast with your host, Buddy Sotelo Esquire, the effervescent Evan Ginsberg, and our guest all the way up from Canada. What part of Canada, by the way?
I'm from Winnipeg, you idiots, as Jericho has known to say.
Winnipeg. Okay, wonderful. We have them from all over America's hat, so to say. And that is with Grappling with Canada podcast. It is Andy Dulovic, and we are very glad to see you tonight. And I saw your podcast a ways back with Evan Ginsberg about the death of Hulk Hogan. You had a very interesting panel discussion, and I said, boy, this guy knows what he's talking about. I think we should have him on our show.
Well, I'm glad I fooled you into that one. But no, I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you so much for the invite.
Great. So, did you get a lot of feedback on that episode or the Hulk Hogan retrospective?
I did, actually. Most of it, I will say, was pretty positive. I think the direction we took was, it wasn't like a lot of the other ones that were out there where they were caught between a burial or they were really trying to get him over, ignore the less tasteful parts, shall we say. But I think we did a good job of playing it straight down the middle. We didn't try and sensationalize anything, which is always my biggest pet peeve with projects like that. So I thought we played it pretty straight. I thought the guests had a lot to offer, especially, you know, with the New York scene, specifically speaking of that. I mean, New York is the center of the wrestling universe. As much as I'm loath to admit, I would love it for it to be Winnipeg, but you know, it's clearly not. But no, I thought we played it straight, and the responses from the podcast, in my opinion, showed us that we took the correct path.
Well, we like to think in San Francisco, we've got quite a bit to say as far as, like, you know, the wrestling world goes. And of course, down in Southern California, where Dr. Mike Leno is, we would like to claim some significant claim to the wrestling world. And thank you for joining us.
Japan is the epicenter of the wrestling world on this planet. No question.
Really? I was going to say Omaha, Nebraska would be a hot day.
Country. Okay, Russ, since you brought me up late, can you just tell me who Taxman is? I didn't get a word on the guest, so I didn't hear the intro.
Oh, it's Andy Dilovich, who is with Grappling with Canada, the podcast, and they had Evan on as a guest, and so I figured it's, you know, what if he can punish Evan, we can punish him by bringing him onto our show.
So. Well, we don't want to punish anybody. Grappling with Canada is the name of your podcast?
Yes.
Well, yeah, Canada, I've had amazing territories.
I don't know, Andy, how far back you go, but you know, Evan and I go back to like the late 60s, and so Canada had these amazing territories, the Maritimes, the Vachon versus Rougeau territorial war in Montreal, obviously Tunney at Maple Leaf in Ontario, all the guys that came out of Hamilton. There was wrestling in Nova Scotia, obviously Stu Hart. So excuse my ignorance, tell me a little about your podcast. So are you looking at the history of Canadian wrestling or what's going on now more in terms of indies? Like there, I don't know what happened. There was an all-female great promotion in Montreal that's not, I don't know if they promoted in the last 2 years. They were during COVID and prior to it.
Yeah, so the program is one where we will take one individual. Stu Hart was one. This goes back a few years, so maybe you forgot, Mike, but we did Rhonda Singh. I had you on for that episode. That was a few years ago. That was 3 years ago. So what we do is we'll spotlight either one individual or a tag team of individuals such as the Toldos Brothers. We did that episode. Evan was gracious enough to join me on that one. And we'll spend, you know, 2, 3, 4 hours, depending on how long it takes to really dive deep into their backgrounds, what they meant to professional wrestling, not just in terms of Canada, but internationally. We look at what they left behind, legacies, people that they've inspired. And also, every episode, save for one, has multiple guests. So I have various historians who joined the program. Evan's been on a few times. Mike, I had you on previously. I have authors on when there's books written. We kind of run the gambit of personalities and people to really flesh out a lot of these lives and backstories of, in some instances, some forgotten individuals. So that's kind of what we focus on.
We did over 2 hours on Ivan Koloff, and at the WWE Hall of Fame, they gave him 90 seconds.
Yeah, just ludicrous. I'm sure we'll get into that.
Yeah, that was one of the pissers for Bruno. And then the Vachons, when he started, they gave him a real crazy, Paul Vachon gave him a crazy name when he first started. But have you talked about, here's some guys. So this is just off the top of my head, and I'm going through some cancer therapy, so, you know, my brain is a little fried at times. But Joe and Paul LeDuc.
I haven't.
As Joe's and Paul LeDuc.
Yeah, I haven't done them yet. They were on.
No, I'm just throwing out some guys that am particularly astute on. Ed Carpentier is a great one, and I used to drive him around a bit when he came into Los Angeles for his second go-round. His first one was in 1960. He was the very first WWA world champ. You know, they did basically what the AWA did in Minnesota, but they did that in Los Angeles. And Carpentier, very first champion, he dropped it to Blassie. But other guys from Canada that were global in stature, Don Leo, Jonathan, I hope you've, if you've not done one, I'm, or Kaniski, Big Thunder.
Kaniski, I've done.
So many amazing guys. I bet you don't, I don't, Evan knows this because I told him when we were doing radio a jillion years ago about Kaniski and Walter Kowalski, sometimes with Dutch Savage, but they would pull like Saturday or Sunday morning pranks, like almost weekly. They would do phony phone calls to Sam Muchnick. Remember, Ev, I told you about this when the, particularly Kaniski was telling me this, and sometimes involve gun talk with Kowalski, who was like, you know, vegetarian and a very peaceful guy. But I'll shut up. But what a period when the territory war was going on in Montreal and Andre was first starting out as Jean Ferret, and he had all of these total legends, starting with the Vachons, who ran Grand Prix, but Don Leo, Kowalski, the Leducs, obviously Carpentier, who babysat, as did Frank Valois for Andre, and about a jillion others, and the two outdoor Jerry Park Stadium shows that even Dick the Bruiser and guys like Lanza and Mulligan would just do one-offs and come up and work like openers for Grand Prix. And the Rougeos had just as big a wealth of talent with Abby and the Sheik and an early, it was Michel Dubois before he became Alexis Smirnoff. Anyway, Canada, what a great, and of course, if you look at Hamilton in the Ontario from the 40s, 50s, producing the Tolis brothers, the Brunettis, all of these guys came out. That was like a wealth, almost like Ohio, you know, spitting out Buddy Rogers and so many other guys. At Hamilton, Ontario, Canada was huge. So anyway, apologize for interrupting, but I'm passionate about talking about Canadian wrestling. Besides everything else, you know, Japan. And so, a lot of guys don't even know that, you know, they talk about, let me just finish this. All Japan affiliated with the NWA. New Japan eventually starting in 73, got all of Tri-WF and Vince Senior's guys. But a lot of people forget there was an IWE promotion. It was older than All Japan or New Japan, and it was primarily affiliated with Bernd Gagne's AWA. So like all of those guys would go in there, like Bruiser and Crusher, when they were finished with Ricky Dozan's group, they were going there. Was, and I meant winding this up, when Monsoon thought he had died, and he was on his second tour for the IWE, you know, after he dropped the strap to Backlund, and he's in Japan, but Monsoon, I don't know where that rumor came from that Billy Graham had died, but he was wrestling in Japan at Karakuen. All right, I'll shut up.
Never corrected it too, which is tremendous.
So Alex, can
so
you
much
tell
goofy
us how,
stuff
how you got involved in wrestling, what got you interested in wrestling to begin with?
Oh, that goes back to like when I was a kid growing up at my I spent a lot of time at my grandparents' place. So we'd get the WWF feed. What was it? Was it Saturday afternoons, I think, at 2 o'clock is what it was here. And so that was the cartoon era, if you will. But that was my first introduction to like Bret Hart, which is still my all-time favorite wrestler, period. I mean, so I was watching back then, fell out in the after the big Attitude Era, after the big wrestling war, and when WCW went out of business, my fandom kind of went off with it, and took a few years break. Was watching. Sorry, my cats decided to join the program.
Oh yeah, we're big pet friendly.
Yeah.
Talk to Evan about pro cats.
I have two cats.
Yeah, and they've made guest appearances too on the interviews that we've done. So yeah, I fell out. I got back in a little bit with TNA. I thought that was an interesting project. Obviously, we know kind of what happened with the story there. Fell out again. Then I got back in the late 2010s, and I've been off and on watching ever since. Not as much as obviously I used to as a kid. Can't really invest 3 hours of my life anymore into programs, especially of the caliber they are lately. I'm sure Evan feels the same as myself, but yeah, just tangentially following it now, but more so focused on the historical side of it. And that's what I really find interesting.
Since you mentioned TNA, I have a point. If WWE uses them as pawns just to hurt AEW and puts them opposite AEW, then don't they kind of become like, you know, the heels? Because I'm going to root for AEW over TNA if they're used in that way. It's, if they're under WWE's umbrella. And I mean, I've been a fan of TNA for 20 years. I don't want to see them put in that position. It's I want them to succeed on their own merits. And I was at that pay-per-view, and there were three very good or excellent matches, and the rest was pretty forgettable. It wasn't any masterpiece by any.
But how different is that from the WWE product?
But the problem here that we're all concerned about is that it could actually cost TNA if they go and they're opposing AEW on Wednesdays, which is what Meltzer and Alvarez were talking about. It could shoot WWE in the foot because TNA could do shit in the ratings, and AEW is going to retain their audience no matter what. So why sacrifice TNA? I don't look at them as they are a pawn, exactly, but I don't look at them as bad guys. It's too much wrestling as it is now, but I would leave them on their Thursday night. Thankfully, it's insane. I mean, I have to tape the 3 hours of stuff that's on A&E right now on a Sunday, and all I've been able to get through on an amazing, for at least for me, because I was there from day one of AAA Mexico, is the Battle Royal, the opening Battle Royal. Did you guys, I sent you the links. Did everybody watch some or all of the AAA?
I just watched the main event and I was disappointed.
Yeah, I wasn't very blown away by it.
Well, see, they're meddling there too. They're all, it feels like they're creating their own NWA in terms of a bunch of territories, but territories they can control and sprinkle in their talent. But I don't want to see AAA watered down, petered down. You know, I don't want to see any of the female groups they're affiliated with in Japan. Like,
here's my phraseology, which is, why do you want to see McDonald's making tacos? You know, AAA is its own brand of wrestling, really. And when you see the WWE starting to homogenize it, make it into the McDonald's type of wrestling that you wind up seeing.
Well, they've only done the two pay-per-views free on YouTube. So, I don't know. I kind of want to see what was going on. I don't know the results yet, so please no spoilers. I just wrote a big, huge piece on
Natty Neidhart's. It'll spoil itself for you. Don't worry about
Natty Neidhart's history in Japan before I shot her in her rookie year when she came to Northern California on Kirk White's shows. She did, back and forth a little more than 2 months in Japan, but she got her confidence boosted by Aja Kong there, which was, you know, one of those big legends like Dump Matsumoto and Bison Kimura and some of the Red Bull Nakano, et cetera. So, but, you know, these tentacles at WWE, I don't know. I don't know. How many pieces of talent, you know, they had like Otis and then what's his face, the gigantic Manute Bowl of wrestling. That's a basketball reference. Who won the Battle Royal?
Almost.
I can't even see them ever bringing him back.
He could almost wrestle.
Yeah.
But there wasn't much wrestling. Although it was the whole purpose of that Battle Royal was the visual of Micro Man, who's like a foot and a half tall, legit the smallest guy ever in the biz, with Almost, who I don't know what his legit, you know, they always beef it up with and then put on the lifts. So he's probably legit 6'7", 6'8".
I was like, hoping Micro Man was going to body slam Almost, but it didn't happen.
did you watch that opener, Evan, that opening?
I just saw the clip, and all the context clues told me that Almost was taller than the other guy.
Yeah, but it was like, I think Microman only came up to the top of his boots. It was that weird of a visual, sort of like a Salvador Dali painting or something.
So I would actually like to see something like that, because it would be different.
But first of all, what's your cat's name, Alex?
Oh, this is Kevin.
Kevin. Okay.
Yes. Kevin Von Erich, is he going to do the claw on you?
He's trying to. I don't know if you just caught that or not, but yeah.
So I think we've all been clawed by cats. Alex, what are your thoughts on how Canada perceives the moves of the WWE? We have our own thoughts here in the United States about the WWE, but I'm kind of in the not main saying you're the spokesperson for all of Canada, but wait, maybe you have more of your finger on the pulse of what Canadians think. What do you think Canadians feel about the WWE right now and its expansion moves and that sort of thing?
Well, I'll soft correct you. It's Andy, and I'm not offended. So,
oh, sorry.
That's okay. No problem. It's been kind of it's always been almost a love-hate relationship with the WWE up here. There's been tremendous moments over the years, you know, that WrestleMania, what was that? WrestleMania 2000 or with Hogan and Rock, right? In the Sky Dome is still one of the greatest spectacles of all time, right? But they also killed Stampede Wrestling twice, kept them out of business, killed All Star, they killed Montreal. Although that, a lot of that was self-inflicted too. Killed Owen Hart. I'll never forget in the 90s, you'd have all these Canadian wrestlers come out, Jericho, Edge, Christian, whatever. All billed from American cities constantly. That was always the big sticking point for us. That was in the 90s. You fast forward to where we are now in this talk with TNA. Well, when Scott D'Amore, again, a Canadian guy, was kind of running that promotion, and he got forced out, and now you see this zombification of TNA, which is, that's my opinion of what's happening with it, and now they're just being used as a pawn to run cover for some reason. I mean, Lord knows the WWE hasn't made enough money at all at this point. They gotta squeeze every red cent they can out of everything, it seems, at this point. But it's not, they don't get as much favoritism in the fans' eyes, I think, as they do in America. I think Americans look at WWE as a success story with rose colored glasses. You even talk to people when they fondly remember the Attitude Era as this glowing, tremendous time, forgetting just the absolute drivel that a lot of it was. And again, we're following it at that time, and you see what it's become now. 3 hours of smack dumb, as Evan would call it. It's not good programming. Again, there's not much to satiate the Canadian market at this point in time. And
let me take it a step further, Andy.
Go ahead.
You have WWE embracing Trump and MAGA, and they haven't been particularly nice to Canada. So nope. What's your take on that?
Well, that the between the tariffs and that whole thing has just been, it's been.
Wait, the 51st terrible. State bullshit? Are we going to get into this, that idiocy?
Well, I hope we don't get too far into it, but I will say that it has put a quite a big damper on Canadians' enthusiasm with anything American, point blank. I mean, friends, so I'll go off on a bit of a tangent here. So friends of mine, our hockey team, I should say, every year we go down to Grand Forks. It's about 3 hours from Winnipeg. And we play a tournament there, a hockey tournament every March. Well, this year, two-thirds of our team didn't go because of the tariff thing. And it's a direct result of animosity that a lot of us feel up here for the treatment that we have. And I don't want to get in an orange man bad thing. I don't think that's the point, but it's the feeling that we have up here we're just supposed to play second fiddle and like it, I guess, is what it is. And
my point is that WWE embraces them and President Trump, and it poses with them, and they're at the White House and, you know, sings his praises, then, you know, I could understand why Canadian fans would be, you know, upset with WWE. And Greg Oliver recently said he wasn't coming to the States because of all of this.
Well, he's not going to the CAC this year directly, because, and I know he's not the only one either.
Huge contingent of, I mean, we had maybe 23%, I think, of for years. And I stopped going when the COVID thing was mishandled, you know, my last CAC. And I was on the board for many years in the 80s and 90s. My last one was in 2019. But we had a huge contingent. Michelle Starr would bring all of his students. You know, we had all this stuff. Let me just say that we're of the same mindset. We all barfed when we heard Trump utter, you know, well, it's his daily bullshit, and hearing that stuff and disrespecting Canada. And, you know, he's not even talking about it now. It's all usually fluff he puts up there to take your attention off the 1,001 lies he tells every day.
Reopening Alcatraz.
Yeah, you know, yeah. You just throw this stuff against the wall, and maybe they'll stop talking about Epstein for, you know, a couple of days, and then you come up with some more ridiculous crap. Let me say something about, so if you're in Winnipeg, and excuse me for forgetting, what a historic territory that was. Do you know the stuff that was going on in the 70s, early 80s with Al Tomko?
Oh, it was unbelievable.
You would have AWA versus, you had like Flair against Martel, Flair NWA versus Bockwinkel, AWA, title versus title. And sure, you didn't get clean finishes, but it was just the aura and the spectacle and the stuff like this isn't really happening really anywhere else. I mean, they had the superstar Graham Race in Florida, Madison Square Garden that Evan saw, Harley against Backlund that was a big deal. But there was multiple title versus title, and the whole world was focused on Winnipeg. And that was a big effing deal. That was as big as it got back then. And then these, you know, it wasn't a straight AWA territory. There was NWA guys that would pop in and out. Again, somebody like a past, what a titan Gene Kaniski was, what a great person. And I was blessed to have been around X amount of those guys,
yeah,
not just John. Imagine
Chris that Collins. 20 years older.
But let me say, what great respect. I mean, there was a lot more stuff at times going on. That territory, I am a student of territory wars. The Sheik Bruiser in Detroit, Annie Gunkel taking on the NWA in Atlanta. There were a couple other ones. Briefly, Vern Gagne tried to take over Los Angeles in 69. It was nuts. Only lasted two shows, and he took his tail and left. But the Montreal territory war is the stuff of legend. Oh, and you look at the quality of the cards on both sides. The Rougeaus, La Lutte that became international, and you know, a couple of name changes later, and the Bachans. That was amazing, you know, amazing. So nothing but respect for Canadian wrestling.
So I have a question for Andy. How much of that was taped? I mean, can you see much of that from the 70s? Or?
So there are tapes floating around. They're hard to find, and the quality isn't great. A lot of it is, was never broadcast, which is a shame, right? So what you are able to find, and Marty Goldstein here from Winnipeg has gotten his hands on some of it, I know. But there's like fan footage you'll see of matches here. You'll have the odd studio style taping from one of the matches. Not a lot remains, but it is interesting. I mean, I also run a Canadian Professional Wrestling History Facebook group, and we have the cards that get shown in that group. Like, I'll talk Winnipeg specifically, of, you know, Bockwinkel was a massive star here. You look at the cards, they're loaded top talent, and at the old Winnipeg Arena, they were drawing, you know, 8,000 plus And you got to keep in mind at that time, so your 60s, 70s, 80s Winnipeg, the city only had 550 to 650,000 people. So just in a little town like ours back then, you're drawing quite the market, and it was consistent until eventually they kind of killed the territory up here. More so that was more of a Vern booking decisions than anything. And then you had the influx of the WWF, and that kind of sealed the deal. But yeah, it's funny. You wouldn't think that cards like that would do well up here. And there's a lot of Canadian cities that were out. Well, you look at Toronto, for example, that were way outdrawing their American colleagues and on a consistent basis. And I think maybe that's something that's overlooked big time. And a lot of people seem to not understand about what was happening up here at those, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s eras.
I've told Evan this, heel versus heel, Sheik versus Killer Kowalski at Maple Leaf Gardens. This was 74, 75, I can't remember. Underneath Abby versus Mighty Igor, Dick Garza. Yeah. And just a stellar card, Chris Tolis in the opener, I think against Montreal's Bull Gregory. And amazing stuff. TNA is still owned by Anthem, and Anthem is still based in Canada. Is that correct?
That's right. And actually, one of the principal owners from the Anthem Group is from Winnipeg, one of the Asper family. So there's another connection for you. Which is
really
odd.
It pissed me off, the aggressive pushing out of Scott D'Amore. How is Scott's done at least two big shows that people can watch on pay-per-view. How is his group doing? Because he's got, like, everybody wants to work for him. So you have people from multiple promotions. It sounds very exciting. You know, I'm still bummed he's not. They couldn't retain him in some way. I don't know why he had to be pushed out of the equation there, because look at all he did for TNA for many, many years. He kept it going when it at times was the shits, you know, the
well,
LA Drake
years.
Well,
I think that came down to control. He wanted more control of the company to go in the direction that he wanted to go in, which you're seeing now with Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling, I think is his entity. And yeah, they've had three or four cards, I think now. And tremendous turnouts. Yeah, he's got all kinds of talent there. Josh Alexander's his big guy there right
he's
now.
Great.
And what a tremendous worker. But I think it boiled down to he wanted real ownership, and they didn't want to go that way. And obviously you can see why now. If they had this WWE thing in their back pocket, then it makes perfect sense that they're not going to let Scott D'Amore run with this thing if they know that they're going to be, you know, farming this thing out and zombifying it right before our very eyes.
Well, people are worried they might just outright buy it the way they did with AAA, which was a real shock when they announced that out of the blue, because AAA had been doing fine. You know, both CMLL and AAA have their audience share and do tremendous houses. I don't know how it benefited unless they were having financial problems. Antonio Pena's sister and brother-in-law and all that stuff, Rodan, why that had to happen. But
and what's weird to me is I feel like TNA is, you know, recently put on better shows. That, you know, overall, I think that TNA is, I mean, if you compare it to the product maybe 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when I thought TNA was going to just flat out go out of business, they've turned things around. They've added better talent. You know, they've put together, I think they've booked some better shows than both.
They're
WWE.
Drawing record numbers. They outdrew that last house, the one that had the what's his face from WWE? AJ Styles. Like there, that was, I think, that set an all-time gate in attendance record.
I was there. Surprising. They had 7,000 people. It's not like they were filling a baseball stadium.
Well, that was That was the PR monster. Ev, what was your overall assessment of that show, even minus taking out the talent like Trick Williams and the some of the females from
NXT. I could sum it up in 2 minutes. The pre-show drags it out to like 5.5 hours the entire night, and in that time I saw three very good or excellent matches, and the rest was pretty forgettable. and it's an endurance contest. And they made a terrible mistake putting a mediocre three-man main event on last when they should have sent people home happy with, you know, a different match, because everybody there wanted to see Mike Santana win the belt. And when the WWE guy won, you know, it was like,
well, that was it. They're just saying they had the best opportunity. And look now what he's doing. He's dropped down, sort of like Joe Hendry having to lose to Trick Williams. His stock is going down. You can only carry it so much on that lousy song that, you know, becomes earworm. And he doesn't have much to back it up. I'm sorry. You know, I remember when he was in there teaming with Grado about six, 7 years ago. You remember that. And nothing in particular. I was wondering, geez, why is Ring of Honor bringing this guy in? I just didn't think there was much. You know, there's a million guys that do what he can do. I'm sorry. Super nice guy, ultra professional, and blah, blah, blah. But Mike Santana had it. They should have put the strap on him. And
It was an okay 13-minute main event. They should have sent the fans happy with the Hardys winning the table, ladders, and chairs match. It made no sense. The people did not get what they want, and it was like a balloon that deflated. And it was a long night. And you know, there were three excellent matches. Cedric Alexander's always great, and that kid Leon Slater. Like, you know, this kid's tremendous.
He's pretty amazing. I was at the LA show where he did that insane dive off the.
But other than that, if you put $1 million cash in front of me, I couldn't tell you what I saw a couple of weeks ago, because it was forgettable.
And not just that, but then as soon as you're done watching it, there's another pay-per-view and another, you know, 15 hours.
It's a little hard. Let me ask you guys in Canada, how are you dealing with this? If you're someone who has to cover it, like I do and Evan and you, you know, Monday's fine. Sometimes I'll just say, you know, I need a break. I'll watch Netflix tomorrow, because then there's always excellent NXT. And then, you know, Wednesdays, can't miss TV. I love TNA, is such an easy watch. It's fun. Friday, SmackDown, it's like drudgery all over again. And then I try to find whatever CMLL stuff on cable I can find on Saturday. And then you get a two, three hour block, and not including the pay-per-views. I mean, there was the TNA was last Friday, Emergence, and then the Triple Mania. I was at the first three. And they were just in a Tijuana dusty bullfighting ring, the ones that I went to and shot ringside at. And, you know, that was the one where Conan beat Jake Roberts and he had his head shaved. That was, I think, Triple Mania 3 or Triple Mania 2. But it was just packed stuff. And as good as the commentators, Corey Graves, are, they don't tell you that this is the second La Parca. It's not the original, the skinny La Parca who dances and all that stuff. He's nowhere near to, you know, that particular guy. So I don't know,
Andy,
too much wrestling and too many damn pay-per-views.
How does Canada perceive all this?
Well, I will say that I'm glad I don't have to do it, because when you have time, I don't envy somebody like Greg, although now he's not associated with Slam. That was a lot of his, and I know he offloaded a lot of that, and thankfully so, because I mean, yeah, 3 hours or whatever it is on Mondays, because there is no time limit. They can do whatever they want, right? So you have that. NXT is decent watch. Like up here, we can watch Raw on either Netflix, or we still have it on cable up here. Sportsnet shows it up here. So we have that option. Sportsnet actually now shows TNA. That's its change. It used to be on Fight Network, I think, up here. So, I mean, there's been some maneuvering. And then TSN 2 shows AEW on Wednesdays. And then SmackDown, I think, is Sportsnet again on 360. So, I mean, we have a lot of cable access to it still. It's not Netflix only like you guys down there. The bigger difference that is happening with you guys moving forward, I guess next year, is that whole pay-per-view business, which Oh boy, I guess again WWE hasn't made enough money yet. They got to squeeze every cent out of the Fez.
That's TKO.
Well, but I mean, up,
so
up
greedy.
Here.
But it, overall, yeah, it shows a lot of greed. It's really kind of despicable.
Yeah. So up
now,
here.
Yeah. Now the ESPN deal.
Netflix will still carry our pay-per-views up here. So I mean.
But you know, ESPN is going to handle the pay-per-views down here, and yeah. I'm on Xfinity, and that means I'm not going to get any of the pay-per-views now, even though I've had them with Peacock for the last couple of years. It's this whole shifting around stuff. And my prediction is this, is you're going to be watching a match, and CM Punk is going to climb up to the top rope, and they're going to say, if you want to see CM Punk jump off the top rope, you've got to subscribe to the XYZ network. So, you know, it's going to be, you're going to not be able to watch an entire match all the way through without resubscribing.
While he's holding two Prime bottles leaping off the top rope.
Yeah, exactly.
But I just think, fans, that's going to be a saturation point because, for example, radio-wise on Sirius XM now, with Howard Stern possibly leaving, they gave the Busted Open folks their own 24/7 channel. It really isn't because, for example, the one show they have that's 3 hours on Saturday and a different one Sunday, then simply repeat all day long. There's no other content, so it needs to get in better gear. They have added some newer shows, but you know it's mostly repetition.
I'm grappling with Canada and wrestling and everything coast to coast. That would fill up some blocks for
there
them.
There you go.
Let me ask this. Is the Fight Network still in business? Because they used to show all kinds of old stuff, like New Japan, etc. Are they still around as
an
entity?
Yeah, Fight Networks, they still run up here, yeah.
What programming are they having, though? What can you see on there? Is it like a cornucopia of stuff?
Yeah, it's everything. Everything from old MMA to New Japan to old
Smoky Mountain.
They show the TNA Explosion. If it's obscure, it's on there just about.
Because they owe me 10 grand. I was their online photographer for 3-4 years and never got a check for both MMA and wrestling when they initially started. Aren't they basically, Fight Network's owned by Anthem. They're one and the same. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I should start hitting them up.
We'll
for
get
that
you 10 grand.
Plus interest. they told me, my brother's an attorney, and what they told him is, we're considering bankruptcy. We know we owe Mike this money. They actually admitted in writing, but we can't pay him. But they've made a ton of money. I should revisit that, you know, statute of limitations, whatever. It shouldn't.
I have a question. They lied. If you have a network, alleged network, that's just repeating stuff over and over again, why can't you take content like Andy does, where you have these great, great 2-hour deep dives into these legendary wrestlers, most of whom are gone at this point? So it's timeless. It's history. You know, instead of let's overanalyze Raw and SmackDown and every other show on TV, that wasn't even worth watching, and they're analyzing every angle, every run-in, every comment, every.
Well, they spent a whole week on Karrion Killer Cross. The whole, is it a work, is it a shoot, until finally figuring out he was let go. He didn't go with
cared.
That 24-hour thing.
They finally figured out that nobody really cared.
Yeah, but I mean, in a year, nobody's going to talk about that. Right? It's a big focus now, but it won't be in a year. Whereas what Evan's saying, like there's a plethora of whatever you want to call it. I hate the word content, but sure, let's go with that. That you could make in Canada, just focus on Canadian wrestlers. You could make hours and hours and hours of programming, but we don't up here. We got a big problem up here with how we deal with our past as a country, how we deal with our past accomplishments with our citizens. It's ludicrous. I mean, I made a comment during our Gene Kiniski episode, for example. You go back, I promise you, you'll enjoy it if you haven't seen it, but you go back to his television interviews on CBC, his interviews on CTV and TVO in Ontario, and you watch him, that guy, if he was alive today, if that Gene Kiniski was alive today, he would be a social media superstar. That guy was the definition of talk you into a program. Doesn't matter what it was. Didn't matter if it was his talking about cooking or talking about working somebody in the ring or anything. He was an absolute magician salesman.
John Tolos also.
Well, exactly. But
he's a promo guy.
And what I'm saying is, if somebody would have the guts or the balls or the wherewithal or the money, which I don't very clearly, but if somebody had the actual guts to go out and explore a story like for God's sake, somebody like George Gordienko, his story changed the NWA, and nobody knows that. A guy from the north end of Winnipeg was slated. He was supposed to be a Lou Thesz's successor for the NWA title, and they didn't make the switch because he was pursued by the American authorities for communism charges. Shit like that changed the entire trajectory of the NWA. We could have had one of the biggest names in profession, and he was just not in North America. He was a massive star in Greece. He was a massive star in Europe. Just unbelievable, but nobody knows the story because nobody's taken the time. And thank God for authors like Steve Verrier wrote an incredible book on him. And Canadian historian up here, Vern May, who's studied and has so much of his stuff. But these are stories that we have. They're there for the telling, but we have nobody to do it. And no network, like a fight network, this zombie, whatever it is that they're doing up there. They zero investment. Zero guts to put their name on a story, on a person, to tell these stories. And I mean, I can do it on a podcast and spend, you know, 2, 3, 4 hours and go in depth. But I mean, the fact that our network television, like we have a state sponsor or state funded, however you want to say it, the CBC here, right? Who, again, you want to talk about a network that just runs repeat programming and terrible. They're so mismanaged, and that's a whole other thing. But you're telling me that they couldn't, with the billions of dollars that they have in a year, that they couldn't tell the story of Gene Kiniski, or they couldn't tell the story of Tolo. So they couldn't tell the story. Like, they couldn't make that program? Come on.
I've got to go. Let me just say, Russ, let me just say three things. I got to go. One, I want to see a documentary on Whipper Watson. That could easily be 2 to 3 hours. I don't know if anybody's done that.
Have you
done
a dedicated show? No, I did this one, but that's
about it. Another thing, too, is Lou Thesz handpicked the way he did Dick Cowboy Hutton. He also handpicked Gene Kiniski to succeed him, to drop two, which was a big deal, you know. It didn't change things as much as we were hoping, but Meltzer was a regular, but I was maybe every 6 week guest on, if you remember, Live Audio Wrestling out of Ontario, which is where Trish Stratus got her actual start in wrestling, with Dan the Mouth Lavransky and Jason Agnew and what's his face. I think the third guy was Jason Powell, but I was a regular on that. That was the best produced wrestling radio show I've ever heard. And it holds up to this day. I've got complete copies from the first one to the end. I don't know what happened, why that kind of fizzled out. But I mean, they used to get major guests, and we're talking 20, 25 years ago. It was a big effing deal. And that was right out of Ontario, where I think the studios. So be proud of Canadian wrestling. Know that no one down here except morons want Canada to be anything but Canada. We don't want it to be acquired or stolen or any of this bullshit.
Our 51st state.
Yes. And nothing but love and respect. That's where I America's went on my honeymoon. Hat. We flew into Montreal. We went up to Quebec City and all that stuff, had a great time, and then took the famous train with the plexiglass top to Toronto. And then I met up with Maurice and Paul Vachon, who took me to all the surviving Vachon Brothers Burgers place, if you remember or heard about that. They used to have a hamburger chain the way Gene Okerlund's Bite Burgers. So you guys have a great rest of the show. Sorry, the motor mouth over and out.
Take care, Mike. All
right. We'll see you next week, Mike, hopefully.
Okay.
All right.
Now, so Andy, I have a big question.
Yeah, go for it.
Has there ever been a definitive documentary on Canadian wrestling?
No.
Well,
never.
Maybe we should do one in the future.
The biggest Canadian documentary wrestling related ever done was Wrestling with Shadows, the Bret Hart one.
But that wasn't specifically Canada.
No, yeah. It's not specifically Canada. It focused on one very niche thing. But I mean, there's been nothing covering Grand Prix, like even a territory, like something to cover a territory. Or even a program on the Montreal Wrestling War, or a program on Stampede specific.
I'm saying
Stampede.
Not a niche subject. I'm saying, you know, a history, a full length documentary on Canadian wrestling itself. You know, the different territories, We're talking about I'm trying to find the words for this, because if I put it out there publicly, we know about Stu Hart and the Hart family. We know about different segments of Canadian history. But has there, what I'm trying to figure out is there a documentary that would give an overall picture of why Canada was such an important part of the history of this business? I don't think it's been done.
It's never been done.
Well, then maybe that's something we should all strive towards in the future, because if it's not a niche subject, it could be marketable. And as somebody that has worked on films, you know, you're looking at thousands of hours and several years and X amount of dollars. It's a big commitment. So if something like that is done, it really has to be done right and with the right people.
But you can chronicle an amazing part of wrestling history that really has gone unrecognized and unappreciated, especially here in the United States. I mean, that's the thing, is I've always been fascinated with Canadian wrestling. In fact, for a United States-based program, we have a whole lot of Canadian influence on us.
Yep.
We had Jonathan Schwartz here for a number of programs. He's a Canadian attorney, and we've had JP Zarka on here, and
JP Zarka is British.
But doesn't he live in Canada now?
No, he's in Detroit.
Oh, he's in Detroit. Well, but Detroit and Canada are, you know, like basically influential territories on each other. They pretty much traded talent back and forth. And so, you know,
they're right across from each other.
Yeah, Canada's had such a great influence on us. And, you know, I think by and large, America takes Canada for granted. I think the Canadian influence that you've had on us, we have never really appreciated much. You know, we just sort of take it for granted, but there's so much of an influence that Canada's had on the United States. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, even going back to your episode last week, and I'm sorry, I forget the gentleman's name.
Mark.
When he was talking about his documentary looking at Detroit in the Sheik era, I mean, how many times did he talk about Windsor? Like right there, your guest last week, literally, you know, that's what we're talking about, right?
And WrestleMania 3 being the so huge in, you know, having the entire Ontario WrestleMania out there with, what, 90,000 people there. So whatever.
It was Detroit.
But wasn't there one right after that in Canada? Or was it one of the other big events that we had?
Orndorff and Hogan had a big matchup in
Canada.
Yeah,
they did. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, Canada's always supported, you know, the United States when it comes to what we've put forward. You've always been a great consumer of our product, and we've enjoyed a lot of the Canadian products, but never given Canada the credit back for being such a great territory of wrestling, and, you know, maybe even better than Japan in a lot of cases.
Well, I think a lot of that fault lies with us as consumers of the product and our lack of really putting ourselves, or Canadians have this, we follow the British model in that, you know, that quiet modesty, right? We'll never talk about ourselves boisterously. That's kind of your guys' thing. Where it bites us in the rear end, if you will, is subjects like this, where we won't talk about, you know, what an influence Maple Leaf Wrestling had, for example, right? There's just one, or that's not even talk about, you know, the Tunney's relationship with the WWF, right? That's you go on a whole tangent about it. A lot of the fault is like, even my audience for Grappling with Canada, I look at the metrics and I think 60% of the audience is American. The next highest amount is British. I think Canadian consumers is like third or fourth place on a program about Canadians, because people, they either don't know about it, they've been misinformed, they don't think it's as big a deal as it is. I mean, you know, just before Mike left, we talked about Whipper Billy Watson. Like, here's somebody who he raised through the 70s and 80s over $16 million in charity monies for crippled children, care for crippled children in Ontario. Mm-hmm. That was after he had his big accident that essentially ended his career. I mean, that's what one former professional, and look at all the good he did, and it's, you know, people don't know that because it's not reported. He never went on media tours about it. He never wrote any self-aggrandizing books about it. He just quietly did it. And then it's up to people like, you know, Greg Oliver, we discussed, there's other tremendous Canadian historians. And then there's a schlub like me who just, you know, spends hours and hours and hours meticulously going through stuff to build a program on somebody like Whipper Billy Watson, where I can include, hey, yeah, his wrestling was great, but, you know, here's this.
You see, you'd be the perfect guy to do a project like this, because one, you have the knowledge, two, you have the drive, three, you have the contacts. It's actually doable. The only
four, he's young enough. He's not going to age. You and I, Evan, we can't afford to get any older than we are already, but he can. So
I don't know about that. I was doing Tai Chi this morning with a 92-year-old. So,
but you got to admit, making a movie ages you.
Raising money can age you. But my point is, I think if you wanted to do something special, it can be done. And basically all you would need is, you know, 15 to 20 historians, wrestling legends to be interviewed over a couple of days, and finding the proper footage and finding the proper photos and, you know, the timeline that works. And, yeah, I'm making it sound easier than it is. The Wrestler took us 7 years, and 350 Days took us 6 years.
Yeah.
but I'm streamlining what's involved, and it's doable. And you're young enough where you can invest the time and the energy and
Some art. You can make something that you know, lasts the ages and is something that, you know, is referred to. I mean, granted, you know, 350 Days wasn't, you know, a super blockbuster, but people refer to 350 Days and The Wrestler.
Millions of people have seen it. It's just, you're not going to get rich off of a documentary. That I'm telling you in advance. But millions of people have seen 350 Days. So you do the right project with the right people in it, you know, it could work. I'm just throwing it out there because, you know, you have all these side projects. You have Wrestling with Shadows with Brett. You have 350 Days with Brett. You have the Gordienko book, etc. So on. But nobody's done the overview of all of it, you know? That's what it's like, it's there to be done. So now probably somebody else will do it because we threw it out there publicly.
Yeah, normally that's how it goes. You know, it's funny you say you don't do a documentary to make money, and isn't that the truth? You know, if I wanted to make money podcasting, I would be one of these screaming lunatic talking heads reviewing Raw every week, because apparently that's the thing to do. But I'm much happier to spend what I think is quality time. You know, every episode that I do probably takes me, you know, 30 hours of research just to compile everything. Then you're conducting interviews, you're finding, you know, historical audio, you're including, you know, interviews that you can find.
Some of this is in the public domain, then you can use some of this footage and you could make a documentary. It really comes down to the fundraising and putting the pieces together and getting the right people on board. But I think it's doable. I think it's absolutely doable.
That being said, yeah, we're making you do it. It's not the we'd have much to do. Although you have our support, we'd help promote anything you did. We'd certainly promote. Speaking of promoting, we're almost at the end of the hour here, so I want to make sure you give your social media links and links to your podcast and let people know how they can get a hold of you if they're interested.
Sure, absolutely. So first off, again, thank you guys very much for having me. You can find Grappling with Canada on any major podcasting platform or on YouTube as well. Just simply search for Grappling with Canada. The episodes are meant for audio consumption, so a lot of the YouTube shows are just the audio version. I mean, it has a picture backdrop, but you're not going to be getting any kind of video.
Although
we did just do the live stream with Evan, you had joined for the Hulk Hogan episode. So that was a live, I don't normally do those, live to tape, if you will, but that was an interesting one. Otherwise, there's a Facebook group, or Facebook page, I should say, Grappling with Canada. You can find it there as well. I run the Canadian Professional Wrestling History page, or group, I should say, on Facebook. So you can find that. I'm on Twitter as well, but Twitter is just, it's not what it used to be, but I'm on there at least. Simply search, once again, Grappling with Canada. It's the easiest way to find anything.
Great. That's wonderful. And you've really been a great guest on the show. And as I've said, when you really run out of every possible conceivable guest that you could have, I'm available. So I'd love to do your show.
Well, I got to get you on because we got to do Killer Kowalski one of these times. So.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Although I have no connection with Killer Kowalski, but
if you look right behind me, Killer Kowalski's on the cover of my book, Wrestling Rings, Blackboards, and Movie Sets. I have a piece on him in there. He was a dear friend, and he was a columnist from my old newsletter, and he was amazing. I started seeing him in the mid 70s, and he was already in his 50s. He was like a machine.
Yeah.
I once saw Strongbow and White Wolf against the Executioners. It was in an arena called Sunnyside Gardens, and there was no air conditioning. It was the dead of summer. It was like 120 degrees in there. Kowalski's in a mask, 45 minutes. He's relentlessly coming at these guys. The audience is dying from the heat. This guy's in a black mask. He was amazing, amazing. Oh, yeah. And he actually was in a match with the Oklahoma Kid. You know this story?
I don't know this one.
The guy had a heart attack and died during the match.
Oh, I'm not familiar with that story at all.
Yeah, that's check it out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, something to add to your research when you're Kowalski program. But anyway,
Kowalski was the sweetest guy. He was shy. He was quiet. And you could sit, he would sit on a couch, and like he wouldn't talk unless you talk first. So when he was in the ring, that was that vicious persona. That was not his actual personality.
Sometimes that's where people, you know, turn that other side of their personalities on. But anyway,
so my mother used to see him in the 1950s in Brooklyn when she was a kid, and then decades later, I became friends with him, and it was still like the mock kid in her. She's like, I can't believe you're friends with him. He was so mean.
He was great. Anyway, thank you so much for doing our show tonight. We're looking forward to having you on again in the future, especially there's some big happenings going on with your program, or we have a big Canadian issue. We'll definitely give you a call and have you on the show again.
Absolutely. It would be my absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much for joining us.
All right,
see everyone next week. Good night, everyone.